How can I help you? Hello?
Something just ran in front of us down the road.
Okay, the state police should be on their way in a few minutes.
I don't know what the hell it was, but it was big. It looked like a great big dog.
Is it a bear, maybe?
Maybe, I don't know. Oh, my God!
Sir? Hello?
A giant, hairy creature, part ape, part man. Seen many times in the rugged mountains and deep woods of the Pacific Northwest. The encounters have not always been peaceful.
In our modern world of concrete and steel, we're far removed from the Indian lore of Bigfoot. It's hard to imagine any corner of our crowded world where a giant, man-like creature could roam free. Yet there's persuasive evidence that Bigfoot is real. If we assume that Bigfoot is real and that men are closing in on this seemingly gentle monster, then we must prepare for that first meeting. So long, Bigfoot must understand men very well. The burden will be on us to understand him. Bigfoot may well be waiting for some sign that we're ready.
Welcome to Talk Bigfoot Episode 4. This is the much-promised, long-awaited episode with Lori Phillips. Lori is one of the hosts of the very popular podcast, Nightcallers Bigfoot Radio, along with her daughter, Lauren Smith, Wild Bill Simmons, and Graz, who has no last name. You can hear Nightcallers live Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. They are also featured on Stitcher and have a Facebook page where you can like, follow, and share. Let's get right into it.
Hello.
Hello. This is Lori.
How are you doing, Lori?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. You feeling better?
Yes, finally. Really, I'm a person that if I get sick, I get it like for a couple of days and kick it. I had this for like 2 weeks.
Wow. Awful.
I was sick and then, then, of course, all the conversations after that, I was sick. And the interview, I was sick.
Well, I'm glad you're at least on the mend.
Mm-hmm.
I figured I'd just ask you a few questions. Maybe we could listen to those recordings that you sent her.
Okay.
I don't know if you know our website. We have that talkbigfoot.com website. And,
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, it's a forum. A lot of the members there are big fans of Nightcallers, for sure. Like,
really?
Whenever you guys' show is about to come on, we all go over there and sit and chat and listen and talk.
Okay, are you recording now?
Yes, I am.
Okay. Hi, how are you doing?
How did you originally get interested in Bigfoot?
Well, it was really kind of strange how it happened. I had no belief in Bigfoot whatsoever, no interest in it, I didn't even care anything about the Patterson film or the Legend from Boggy Creek or any of that. I didn't believe in Bigfoot at all. I, of course, believed in ghosts because I did a little paranormal research growing up and stuff. And I believed in UFOs and things like that. But Bigfoot, no. Well, I ended up buying a house in a camp community in Angelina National Forest, right on Sam Rayburn Lake. And I had lived there about 5 years when some strange things started happening. And I, of course, I have always, you know, what I really loved about this place was that it had a lot of trails and a lot of forest that I could go walking in. And I would have strange things happen to me, but I didn't think it was anything. I just thought it was my imagination. Such as I would go in there and I would feel like something was watching me. I would feel like I was being followed. Smells that were there when I went in, but that were gone when I came out. Strong urine odors, things like that. just strange noises at night, knocking sounds coming from the woods. And I, at that time, I thought it was just pine sap or something hardening because it was getting cooler. Something walking around outside my house. So I had the windows up and I'd hear crunching in the leaves, and it was really pitch black in my backyard. And it was like nothing, whatever, whoever it was walking around out there wasn't falling over or anything. We had some fencing out there, some yard implements and stuff, but whoever it was could see perfectly in the pitch black. And it was pitch black. So there were all these things going on, and it was just by accident I ended up in a chat room on Pal Talk. Now, Pal Talk is still going on, but it's now a video chat. But at that time, it was a text and voice chat program. I was looking for some Southern people, and I ran across this room called Gulf Coast Bigfoot Research. And I thought, that's a really cool name. Let's check it out. Well, I get in there, and they're talking about Bigfoot. For real. Oh, my gosh. I didn't have a mic at that time, thank God, because I was laughing at them. I was rolling around on the floor. I was going, these people are crazy. Well, let me kind of jump back. 2 years prior to this, in 2000, can you hear the owl? Oh, I can hear the dog.
I hear the dog. I don't hear it.
Shush.
Oh, yeah, I heard it.
Yeah. Well, about 2 years prior to that, we had gotten a pontoon boat. And I had been wanting to go fishing, but I was working evenings that week. I worked at the paper mill, and I worked swing shift. Some for 7 days I'd work graveyard, 7 days I'd work evenings, 7 days I'd work days, and then I was off. Well, I was on evenings, and my husband and his dad were going fishing every night, and I was like, I want to go fishing. So they said, okay, meet us at the boat ramp when you get off work, which is about 10:30. They met me there, and we went fishing. It's about 4 o'clock in the morning, and I hear, off in the distance, I hear some coyotes kicking off, and I'm listening to that, and then all of a sudden I hear this howl. It was this long, deep howl, and then it morphed into this roar. It was like a howl of a mega wolf and then the roar of a mega lion. I could not for the life of me figure out what it was, and I'd been in the woods for a lot of years and knew every animal. And I said, I don't know anything that makes a noise like that. And everything on the lake got quiet, just quiet. There wasn't even a fish flopping. It was no more crickets, no more frogs. No, it just got deathly quiet. And I had this eerie feeling just pour over me like a hot honey. And I said, you know what? And I started reeling my reel in, and I said, you know, I'm done. We're going to the house right now. And my father-in-law and my husband both had a genetic hard of hearing. They didn't ever hear it, but I did. And I had this fear that whatever it was going to come after us. So I was like, come on, let's go, let's go. And they fired that pontoon boat up. Well, pontoon boats don't go fast enough, if you ask me. I bet we're probably going 30 miles an hour, and it was not fast enough. And I'm steadily looking at the water. It's pitch dark outside. I couldn't really see anything. but I had this fear that something was swimming after us. So we get to the boat ramp, and they had arrived early in the evening. So naturally, the parking lot was full. So they were parked way at the back there, right next to the woods.
Oh, no.
And guess who had to go and get the truck?
Oh,
hey.
Of course.
So I'm running across that parking lot, and I'm looking every which way, and I'm trying to get the key. It was just like Jurassic Park, you know. Was that an impact tremor, you know? It was that kind of freaking out, you know. And so I get in there, and I back up, and we get the boat hooked up, and we take off, and I'm feeling better. I'm feeling safer now that we're gone. But I never really occurred to me that where I heard the howl coming from was not far from where I lived. I just never put the two together. Okay.
So you mean, like, as the crow flies.
Right. Hmm. Right. As the crow flies, I was probably a half a mile.
Oh, wow.
So I'm in this chat room, and I'm laughing, and I just decide to put that in. I hear this howl. Well, there's this fellow on there goes, well, did it sound like this? And he plays this recording, and it was identical to what I heard. Identical. And I just was flabbergasted. So I said, that's what I heard. And they go, well, you heard a Bigfoot. And then they start asking me all these questions, you know, these things that relate to Bigfoot, like wood knocking, hearing stuff moving around your house, stuff getting moved around your house, feel like you're being followed in the woods, you know, all the classic things.
Mm-hmm.
I had every one of them, and I became intrigued. I became totally intrigued. Well, I began to actively investigate my woods for sign, tree limb formations, all this kind of stuff. I was finding wood bows. I was finding X formations. I was finding all these things. I was finding tracks. I was actually being gifted. I kept finding feathers at the end of this trail because I would always walk down to the lake, and then from the lake I'd either go right or left and then venture off through the trails from there. But right at that trailhead, I would always find a feather. Every single day, a different feather. And we're talking eagle feathers, blue heron, different owls, just big bird feathers, which I can tell you, you don't find those in the woods.
Right. I know what you mean.
You really don't.
Were you leaving them anything to make them?
No, because I never made the connection. Because back at that time, nobody talked about gifting. And
right.
I mentioned that I was finding these feathers, and I said, do you think they're leaving them there for me? And they go, no, they're not. What are you talking about? Shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. You know, because I was new. I was new, and I was full of questions, and this was one. Are they leaving them there for me? And they're like, no, they don't do that. And don't go out of the woods by yourself. They're going to rape and kill you and this and that. And that's the kind of stuff I was hearing. But I couldn't stop myself. I had to keep going out there. And I was being followed every single day. And I was finding these. So I just took these feathers and made a big deal about them. You know, I smelled them and I put them in my, you know, I'd had my hair pinned up on top of my head, so I put them on top of my head like an Indian,
mm-hmm.
and go down the trails with them. And then when I got home, I put them in this wreath on my porch, so I had all these feathers. and it was kind of like the display, you know, they talk about the Native Americans would gift and each other, and they would display the gifts, you know, it was kind of that. And I thought, well, that's why I keep getting these feathers. Well, this kind of went on, rocked on for a couple of years from the time I heard the voice till I heard the howl, and I don't know, it's like 98. And then in 2000, I found the group. And then in 2002, Labor Day weekend, I had my first sighting. And I was on the phone with another researcher, and I was standing out on the porch, and I said, let my dog out. And she was, you know, going around the yard doing her thing. And I heard something growling from across the street. Now, across the street was a camp trailer. It was just a mobile home that these people from Houston used as a vacation place. And they were hardly ever there. They were an older couple that would come up with their grandkids. Well, they weren't there that Labor Day weekend. So, but there had been all kinds of activity because it was a holiday. There was all kinds of four-wheelers and boats and all, you know, people running in and out of there, barbecuing, and just all kinds of activity. So that night, I'm listening, and right next to this trailer is the wood line. In the back of the trailer is the wood line, and is a stand of cane, switch cane, you know, that grows, you know.
The river cane, that's what we call it. I'm in North Carolina. Yeah. We call it river cane.
Yeah, river cane. Well, it was a big thick stand of river cane right there, and that's where it was coming from, this growling. And it just was real consistent, just like, just like that. And I thought at first that because that year the lake was down real low, I thought, perhaps there's a boat out there that's hung up on a sandbar. And through the woods, you know, it's coming, because it's probably half a mile from the lake. Through the woods, it sounds like something else. You know, it sounds like growling.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the person on the research on the phone says, oh, get your spotlight and shine it over there. So I did. Got my dog in the house, walked to the end of the driveway, and shot it over there. And it was probably 75 feet from the end of my driveway to the switch cane, maybe 100 feet. So I shine it on the switch cane. I don't see anything at all. He goes, pan the wood line. And so I've got a 2 million candle spotlight. I mean, it's a monster. Back then, they were big and heavy and, you know. So I pan the wood line over to the trailer. I don't see anything. But these older spotlights, they make a ring, you know, outer rings around the initial spot. And I could see something moving in the outer ring. And so I whipped it back, and that's when I saw him. And he was standing next to a tree, a pine tree, and I noticed right away there was a knot right there. So I noted the knot and tried to look at him, and he's already bending down. He is bending down. He's turned his head away from the light, and he's bending down behind a big stand of yaupon trees. And these yaupons were probably 6 foot, and he was probably... I think they were maybe 8 foot tall. I don't know, because all I could see was from the chest up, he had seemed like short hair. He was very sleek. He was very built like a basketball player. He wasn't real bulky, yet he was muscular. He had a round head. I noticed he had an ear, because when he turned his head, he had an ear. I noticed he seemed like he had kind of a flat face of a profile, and he was the color of pine needles, just red pine needles, you know, dead pine needles,
kind of
a reddish. So he ducks down, and I'm just standing there. I am in complete shock. I realized at this moment that I never really believed they existed. I was just playing along. I was just going out there, you know, trying to prove it to myself and all this kind of stuff. But at that moment, I realized I did not believe in Bigfoot at all. But now I did.
You couldn't deny it anymore after that.
I couldn't deny it. I was completely in shock. And all I could say was, oh, my God. I can just imagine if he saw my face, what he thought. He probably thought I was absolutely mortified at the sight of him, that I thought he was so homely or whatever, you know. I don't know. I just got the feeling that he was insulted.
Leave it to a Southern lady to worry about whether or not Bigfoot's insulted by how ugly he is.
I'm telling you, it was something else. It was, and of course he was gone. And so I went back in the house and I've told this story so many times, but I sat there on the couch. I got on the phone and I sat there on the couch for probably 3 or 4 hours, just in a daze. I really think I kind of went into shock because it just was such a huge shock to me. A life-changing event is what it was. Because then that next morning when it got early enough I could call, or late enough I could call somebody, I called somebody, and of course the researcher came from Fort Worth, or no, she was actually in Garland, Texas, and she drove all the way up there, down here to where I lived.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, okay, we're going out there. And I go, you go ahead. She goes, you come with me. And I said, you know what? I don't know if I'm ever going to go in those woods again. She goes, you come on with me. So we went on out there. We walked behind the Sandy Oak Pond. We found where he was standing, and it was a bald spot there that was well worn. He had been standing there a lot.
Yeah.
And from there, if you parted the yaupons, you could see my house. But these yaupons were huge. And he was still standing well above them. And so we had to use PVC pipe and a hat to measure how tall he was. He was 11 foot tall.
Holy
11
cow.
Foot. And I just couldn't believe he was that tall. But there's been other sightings down in the same forest, 12 foot, 11 foot, 10 foot, not really an unusual height. So I didn't realize that at the time because I always thought they were 7 to 9 feet tall. I never thought 11. Nobody's going to believe 11. Nobody's going to believe 11, but he was 11. So, and the smell there, the stench, the whole area was permeated in this stench that smelled like vomit, poop, pee, and a musk. And it was just so strong that we couldn't find any source. The whole area was permeated with that smell. And it lasted well into the next, till that evening before it started to fade away. So it had been there from midnight to night before, almost 24 hours that smell stayed there. So we continued to look and everything, and I'm just ready to get back to the house. I don't really want to be out there. And it took me a while to start getting the courage to get up and get out there and realize that one thing that did happen is that I no longer got any feathers.
Huh.
The feathers stopped.
I wonder if he was mad because you shined a light on him, or... Or if maybe he really was insulted because your facial expression whenever he saw him.
Yeah. Because I could just imagine. I was just like, it was just like looking at something. I can just imagine what my face was. I know I was absolutely terrified when I saw him. So that look of fear and shock and everything else was probably, he probably thought I was, thought he was, I don't even know. I don't know, because it was so quick. I can't even really tell you. All I know is I was absolutely sure I saw it. And the evidence of the smell that he left behind in the worn place, because I had felt like somebody had been watching my house at night. I would close my curtains.
Yeah.
Even though I had no neighbors across the street home, I would always leave the curtains open because nobody was going to be looking in. But I started to feel as though I was being watched. So at night, I was starting to close my curtains, and I think that he was standing over there watching the house.
Huh.
So,
did you get a look at its face at all?
No. And that's another thing, too, because I have seen him, and then about, that was in 2002. In 2003, I saw another one, only profile. And no face. I did not get to see the face. I saw him only briefly. I saw another one Later that year up in Oklahoma, I didn't get to see his face. And it wasn't until I moved over here to Nacogdoches, where I live now, that I actually got to see the face. It took being in it, 10 years before I actually got to see the face. They seemed very shy about showing their face. Oh, my gosh, there's a deer in my yard. Y'all leave that deer alone. No.
Maybe there'd be a Bigfoot come chasing her out of the woods.
Oh, that is a big old deer.
Is it a buck?
Oh, they say, no, it looks like a doe. But it could be a buck. I couldn't really see any nubs on it. Still early.
Yeah, it is early.
Oh, my goodness. Goodness sakes. I'm always exciting here.
Yeah, I guess so. I can't believe that called you and you had stuff happen while she was on.
Yes. Yes. And that was so weird, too, because I want to tell you why. It has been nothing here for a while. It's been very quiet. But that particular night, I was being watched. I could feel the creepy crawly feeling of being watched, and I was hearing heavy movement, so I knew there was something out there, and I didn't want to break out the spotlight or anything. I try to be respectful and not do that, and so therefore you're kind of at the mercy of imagination, more or less. It could have been a deer, could have been, but I didn't feel like it was a deer. When you've been doing it as long as I have, you feel when they're around, and you feel when they're looking at you. It's kind of unusual, but it happens. And you probably talk to other researchers that will say the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
They got a sense that they're something very different than the normal wildlife out there.
Well, my own experience, I had that happen where...
Really?
I was freaking out in the middle of the woods where normally I wouldn't be. I'd done it a million times. Never freaked out before. But this one time, I just had this feeling. And, it turned out to be a Bigfoot.
Yeah. And that's exactly what happened with me that night. I couldn't say, that it was actually one, but it felt like one. And I thought it was so strange that after all these months of nothing, on that particular night, there was something out there.
Yeah.
And so I think
that's pretty cool. I have that recording. I'm going to play it right now.
It's nothing like there. Did you hear that? Thinking that the first one was a Sasquatch and the rest was coyotes, possibly. And it sounded like coyotes, the yipping and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that first howl is that, that real deep.
So, it was pretty interesting. You can definitely hear howls, which I think some of them were probably coyotes. But
yeah.
I don't think the first one was a coyote at all.
Okay, now the event, there is howling. It's howling that starts off in the distance, and then the next thing you know, it's completely surrounded us like a chorus. That's the event.
Okay. I actually have that one loaded up on the computer right now.
Uh-huh. let me tell you how that, if you're still recording, I'd like to tell you how that came about.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
It was in March 2003, and we had found this really hot area that was, it was a flat area, kind of like a clearing, that was between two creeks. And it was hot, hot. Every time we went there, we'd have something happen. We had these two researchers from Woodville that came up, and so we took them to this place. And my friend, she had done a call, but I don't really think it was her call that stirred it up. But it could have been, because she did the call, but it was like 45 minutes later. I know this because I was recording at that time with a Radio Shack recorder that used 45-minute or 90-minute tapes, 45 on each side, and you flip them. Well, it wasn't until I flipped it to the other side that something started happening, and she did the call on the first side, and it, so it was almost 45 minutes later, we start hearing this distant howling, very deep howling. It's good ways, and the way this place is, it's two creeks with a clearing in the middle, and then past the creek, past the little woods there that are around these creeks, is just two open fields on both sides. So we hear this, and it sounds like the howling is coming from the other end of the open field, probably a mile away. So we hear this howling, and the next thing you know, within 45 seconds, that howling is on top of us. And it's coming from three different directions, and we're trying to get in the vehicle. We're leaving our equipment out and everything. I'm trying to get mine in. I don't know why. I'm trying to get it in, and it's hung up in the door and everything else. And all the while, there's just this screaming and howling, and it's like a chorus.
Mm-hmm.
It came from in front of us, behind us, and to the right of us, or no, to the left of us. The only place that didn't come from was to the right of us. There was no sound coming from that way, but everybody got in the vehicles. And the people from Woodville had their recording equipment on a tripod, and they left it out, and they were over there arguing about who was going to get out and get it. I mean, we had our trucks running and everything. It was so freaky. It was so freaky. I thought maybe it was coyotes because I listened to it. It kind of sounds like coyotes in some parts, but that, you know, the chorus of it was not coyotes. The din was too loud. And unfortunately, my recorder was just a stock mic. And, oh, if I had a bionic ear, I would have got one hell of a recording. But I didn't get it because back then, bionic ears were precious to come by and were more expensive. And so I just had what I had. And finally it got quiet, and they got out and they got their equipment and all, and we left the area. But we never slept that night. We were so excited about that, what we called the event. That was one of the most exciting experiences, the most adrenaline pumped, because I believe we were surrounded. Now, whether they were responding to our call or they never even realized we were there, because we were there and we were very quiet. We were just milling around our cars in the dark, and we weren't saying anything. We were just listening. We made no noise, and either they didn't know we were there or they knew we were there. It could have been either one. So, whatever, it was very scary and very exciting. And if I ever have that happen again, I hope I've got a bionic ear. So that's what that one's about.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
So then you got the next one, which would be Mississippi Bigfoot.
Yes. Yes.
Tell me about that one.
Okay. I had met, and I'm pretty sure you've heard of them, Bear and Kumbo.
Oh, yeah.
Bear and Kumbo. I was fortunate enough to meet them in the very beginning, and I learned a great deal from these two gentlemen, a great deal from them. And they were great because they did not mind taking a group of people out. And when they take a group of people out, we would actually have things happen. These guys could really call. And when they called, they had a kind of an aggressive call. So you always had an aggressive interaction.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, that's cool. You know, especially,
yeah.
You know, it's very cool. And even though it's probably not very nice for the Bigfoot, it was still great if you were wanting to experience what they were about. And so anyway, I went to Mississippi. A group of us from all over had met in Mississippi, and he took us to an area in Carroll County. And it was just this big bridge. And we went up on this big bridge, and he did a call. And all of a sudden, down below the bridge, this thing sounds off. And then off in the distance, you hear something replying to it. And then it sounds off. Then the reply. Then it sounds off. And then the reply. And it could be what some people say is a raspy coyote. But, oh, my God, I've never heard a coyote anywhere that sounds like that. To me, I truly believe that we got a Mississippi Bigfoot that night. I was recording. There was an owl in there, of course, and everything else, but it's an incredible recording, great capture. That's my biggest thing. I love to record.
Yeah.
So, we never saw anything. Of course, we didn't shine our lights down there or anything like that. We didn't really have some of the people there felt like that something was trying to come up on the bridge. But my thing was I was just excited as I could be. I used a little flashlight to make sure the little reels were turning. I said, please let me be getting it. So I did.
So, did you guys stay the night there or did you move on after?
Yeah, not right there we didn't. We stayed the night in another area. We just went there to do the research.
Gotcha.
And I have to say that I learned a lot from these two guys. They were really, really, they knew their stuff. And so I did. I learned an incredible amount. But, you know, I also learned a lot on my own. And I was hard at it.
I like Ben a whole heck of a lot.
Yeah.
I like
sure
them a lot.
Tell a story, you know?
Yeah, they can.
They sure tell
sure.
a story. But, you know, they were the... Well, Bear in particular was one that really, he was really worried about me being out in the woods by myself. But I knew I had nobody there to research with me. And I knew I was never going to learn anything unless I got out there. And I just took a chance.
Mm-hmm.
And then after years went by, you know, I told him, I said, look, nothing has happened to me. And I spent 25 years out in the woods photographing wildlife and stuff. Nothing ever happened to me again either.
Yeah.
So maybe they rape and maim women in another state, but in my state of Texas, they don't. So, or maybe I'm not their type, you know. That could be it.
You're not hairy enough. That's what the problem is.
Not hairy enough, yeah.
What do you think about them mimicking other animal sounds?
You know, to me, they used to do it a lot more in early days. When I first started doing this, I would hear it a lot. I don't hear it so much anymore, not down here in Texas. Another thing I don't hear either is wood knocking. It's almost like they know that we're on to them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're finding different ways to communicate now. I hear a lot of rock knocking, different types of vocalizations, but not the standard whoops hardly ever. I hardly ever hear howls anymore, rarely. It's like they used to start out sounding like would sound like an owl, and then they morph into a rooster or a cow. Or I've even heard them do donkeys. They'll start out as a donkey, and then they'll do a bull elk or something, you know, and there are no bull elk down here. And I heard that in North Texas.
Yeah, so I heard that so many times that they start off with one animal, and then it kind of morphs into the sound of another animal at the same time.
I'm not saying they don't still do it. They may still do it in other areas. I just know it's not very common down here anymore. Things, they have gotten extremely quiet down here. Audio-wise, I'm just real lucky if I pick up anything anymore. And it could just be my area, but I've gone down to the Neches River, the Angelina, trying to get what I would have to say would be Bigfoot, and it's not. Mm. I'm not getting anything. So I don't know why they've become so quiet, but it has to be because this is what I think is happening. You've got Finding Bigfoot. You had Monster Quest before that.
Mm-hmm.
Before that, you had Mysterious Encounters. It has created a whole lot of interest in the subject of Bigfoot. So there's a lot of people out there researching right now. With our show, Night Callers, we're doing a North American Sasquatch researcher series. And I have never had trouble finding a guest because there are so many researchers out there, so many people. So you've got all these people that are out there, and I think they're changing things up. I know that when I was researching Angelina National Forest, I changed things up. Because I was so aggressive out there, so every day, out there, pounding on trees, taking pictures of everything, recording everything. My God, they couldn't even take a crap. I probably didn't know about it. And so they just got, you know, had to get a whole new plan. So they couldn't communicate the normal ways anymore because I knew that.
Right.
Well, that's a Bigfoot, or that's a Bigfoot. You know, I knew even I noticed that when I first started hearing them, they would wait until our airplane was going over. Then they would make the vocalization. So I would hear them underneath this airplane going over, and I would hear that vocalization in it, but I couldn't really hear it real good because of the planes. They did that. Now they don't even do that.
Well, they're definitely smart critters. So
definitely.
For them to change up their behavior is not out of the question at all.
Nope.
You know, wolves do it. Coyotes do it. Crows do it. All kinds of animals change their behavior.
I think that people out there in the woods, they're doing the Bigfoot calls. They're going through the woods. Everything else, they have to create a whole new way to communicate.
Mm-hmm.
Now, places like the Sierras, where they have Ron Moorhead has captured a language and
right.
and everything like that. Now, those are some very desolate places. There's not a lot of people that go up there. So, you know, they don't have to really change. But here where people can really access these national forests and state parks, like Salt Fork up in Ohio,
mm-hmm.
You know, I will well imagine that they have had to change the way they communicated, the way they interact with each other, everything, just to keep from being detected.
What do you think they are? What do you think Bigfoot is?
I don't think so. I think it is a human, a subhuman, a form of human. A form of human with something else in it.
Okay.
I think that if they could ever get a clear DNA test, and they did do a DNA test, but there was so much controversy around the collection of it and all that. Yeah. I talked to several people that actually contributed samples, and they were scientific people that knew how to collect samples, but yet they said they were contaminated with human because they were finding human in it.
Right.
Well, I don't think that was an accident. I think there is human in it. I think that they are human to a certain point, not like us. I think they have some human in them, but I think there's something else too, a species that's not even been found yet. I think it's just a...
That fits with what the Native Americans say. You know, yeah. They think that they're just another tribe out there. It's a distant tribe, and it's an unknown tribe, but it's still, they consider them human-like.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, very human-like. Very human-like. I have to agree with that. I do have to agree with that. Everyone that I have seen was round-headed, except for the last individual that I saw, and that was here, where I live now, and it was in December of 2007. And it was high noon. It was a cool day. We were replacing the roof. It had a hurricane earlier that year that had tore the roof up. So we were replacing the roof. It was a shingle roof, so we were having to scrape all the shingles off. My boyfriend at that time was up there scraping the shingles off, and I was loading them up into a wheelbarrow and rolling them down the hill to the pond and dumping them behind the pond dam. Can mm-hmm. you still hear me?
Yep.
Okay. Well, I walked down there. This is probably my 15th trip. And, of course, he's up there banging and scraping and making a lot of noise. I'm sure that's what drew him up. But I get down there to the pond dam, and I smell him. And then when I smelled him, I looked right at him. I'm still standing there holding the wheelbarrow and looking at him. And he's probably 15, 20 feet, maybe. I'm not good with distance. He was anywhere from 15 to 30 feet from me. He was down in the gully, kind of on the other side. And he's just standing there looking at me. And I'm just standing there holding that wheelbarrow looking at him. And it was so strange because all the times that I'd ever seen one, I got so excited. I was just animated. But this time it was such a calm. I got such a calm feeling. It was almost surreal. I said, I'm looking right at him, and I'm not afraid. And I got to really look at him too, and the only thing I could see his face, but the sun was directly overhead, so his heavy brow ridge, he had a heavy brow ridge. I couldn't really see his eyes. They were in shadow. But I could see the rest of his face, and it was very apish looking, almost gorilla like, very dark. The rest of him was silver, black, and brown hair, very long. He had a sagittal crest on his head. His shoulders were sloped. His arms were real long. He really looked different than the other ones I had ever seen. He looked like an abominable snowman. You know, you ever saw, I don't know, Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer,
I know,
or
exactly
Wizard,
what you're talking
about,
yeah.
But and that's sort of kind of what he looked like, except, of course, I never saw his teeth. But he kind of had that look, and I got the sense that he was very old. I just thought he was old. Don't ask me why. I guess because he was so silver. I look at him, and we look at each other for probably 15, 20 seconds. Then he just steps off into the woods, and I don't see him anymore. Like I'm trotting up this hill, and I'm like, guess what I saw? Guess what I saw? And he says, you saw Bigfoot, right? And I said, you know that? And he goes, I've been seeing something big and gray moving around down here. I said, Emma, you let me go down there.
He's like, yeah, I wasn't going to do it.
Well, he was up on the roof, so he had a really great view, you know, of anything moving around down there. And, of course, all the foliage was down, so he really could probably really see something but couldn't really make it out.
Right.
Well, I got a good look. It was the best look I ever got. And so that was pretty exciting. That was my last, well, wasn't the last time I saw him. I did see him one more time. Do you want to hear about that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, it was in August of 2010. And I had a friend that was kind of interested in, she was getting interested in Bigfoot. I was dragging her out on these little excursions, and we would go and camp and stuff like that. But our favorite thing to do when we were both broke and couldn't go camping was we would sit out on this porch, and especially on filming nights, and watch for Bigfoot. You know, sometimes we'd see eyes shine, sometimes we'd see shadows moving around, sometimes we'd hear a little low growling, or we would hear sticks breaking and stuff. Sometimes we'd hear rock clacking. So we loved to just sit out here, and we would just carry on a conversation like we weren't doing what we were doing. Well, that's what we were doing this one evening, and the moon was full, but it was there was a high wind up high that was blowing clouds across the sky, across the moon. But down below here, down here, it was real calm. So it would be periods of light and dark, light and dark. Well, there's this old oak tree about exactly 50 feet from the porch. And it sits off to the right of the porch, and here we are sitting facing north. This is more of a northeast, the oak tree. Well, we noticed that there was eye shine behind the oak tree, this humongous oak tree. And we saw something slithering around from side to side. We could see a shoulder. We could see an arm. We could see a head. We could see eyes moving from side to side. And we said, we have got one of them. And at that particular time, where he was at, you couldn't really make out a lot other than it was a dark figure with glowing eyes. That moon was just making those eyes glow. Well, she started up saying, right, might even have been me. I said, well, come on over here. You know, just horsing around. Mm-hmm. Come on over here. You know, and said, come on, you know, come on over here. Quit hiding behind that tree. Come on over here. You know, we really didn't think that it was going to come over here. So we're sitting here in these camp chairs in the moon. The clouds go over the moon again. It gets really dark, and it's really, really dark. You can't see anything, and she's going. And she was sitting closer to the tree than me. I mean, we were sitting right next to each other, but she was closer. She says, Lori, I got the feeling it's crawling up here. And I said, don't be putting that in my head. Don't be putting that in my head. I don't want to know that. She says, I just got this feeling. And I had a recorder down there, but, of course, we couldn't hear what it was recording. We couldn't hear anything. And I said, and of course, at that time, you know, there's crickets, frogs, it's August, you know, there's snow boys. And so about that time, the moon comes out, and I'm looking over there at the tree. Well, down on the ground, about halfway between the tree and the porch, there's this square patch of something kind of glowing, and it's moving. And I said, well, what is that? I've got terrible night vision. She goes, oh, my God, it is crawling over here. And I go, no, it's not. She goes, it's crawling over here. It's on its belly, and it's crawling over here. And, well, I couldn't make out how it was doing that. I said, how is it doing that? She's going, it's like one forearm in front of the other, and it's like pulling itself along the ground, and it's just inching its way towards us.
Like a military crawl.
Yes. Yes. Well, all I could really see was the glowing of the moon on his back, that silver glowing. And I said, I could just see it moving over here. I couldn't really make out there were legs behind. I couldn't really make out a head or arm. I could just see that something was coming, and I could start smelling him. And I'm like, oh, crap. I didn't know what to do. I mean, here I was, you know, by that time, I think I had 13 years of experience. I've been in a whole ton of predicaments, but I've never had anything like this. And she's like grabbing my chair. She's grabbing my chair, just grabbing it real quick, which is scaring the crap out of me. And I said, quit grabbing my chair. And she goes, stop, don't come any closer. And he just stops. It just kind of lays there for a minute. She goes, go back. You can't come over here. It starts going back. And I said, I cannot believe I'm seeing this. I cannot believe this is happening. I can't believe he knows what she's saying or understands her fear or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But he literally moved back and he kind of disappeared into the shadows. Well, the moon goes behind the clouds again, and I'm like, crap. And so we're discussing what we just saw, and did we really see it? Yeah, I saw that, and you saw that, and we saw this, and this is what I really think that was what it was. And, you know, I was trying to debunk it. It was something else. It was just moonshine through the trees or a cloud or, you know, I mean, I'm trying everything to debunk it. Well, the moon comes back out again. We're looking, and I see this strange shape. It is right next to the tree, and I thought it was a bush at first, a big bush, because it's swaying. There's no wind, and it's swaying. And then I realized there is not a bush there. There's never been a bush there, and it's not a bush. It's him. And he's sitting there, and I recognize, and I can see in the moonlight his conical head, the silver on him. I realize I do believe it was the same one I saw a few years before. Same guy. Smelled the same. Had a, you know, same smell. And he's sitting over there, and he's just rocking. And she's going, what's he doing? I said, he looks like he's rocking. Why is he doing it? I don't know why. It's creeping me out. And I said, well, okay. She goes, I'm ready to go in. I go, are you sure? Yes. And she just jumps up, and when she does, it just like, it's like all these sudden movements are startling the hell out of me. And I said, okay, let's go in the house. So we go into the house. And I, to this day, I kick myself. Why did I go in the house?
Yeah.
Why? I would never have gone in the house. I think I did it because I was worried about her, because this was her first encounter, and she was sorely rattled. I don't blame her.
Right.
If I'd been in her shoes, I'd be exactly the same. But I was not brave enough to come out here by myself, because I was worried he'd get up and just come walking right over here. You know, I'm like, you know. So, yeah.
What that swaying back and forth is something you hear in a lot of people's encounters and stories. Why do they do that? I mean, why do you think they do that?
I have no idea. I just know that he started out slow, and he just started getting faster and faster. And I just got an uneasy feeling about it. Was like he was getting more and more upset. Maybe not upset, or more upset, or more nervous, or something was going on there, because I was feeling an energy from him that it was fixing to be, you know, that he was fixing to do something.
And I didn't, about to be bad.
I don't know what he was going to do, if he was going to jump up on all fours and run over here, because it wasn't that far. And as fast as they moved, he could have been right up on top of it.
Yeah.
I just
know how secretive these animals are. And so for it to be making a constant movement, like swaying back and forth like that, that has to mean something. Because they're not just giving away their position and where they are just because they have a habit of going from one foot to the other, you know. It's got to mean something.
I don't know if he was frustrated or if he was trying to calm himself. I'm really not sure. I don't know. There's no way I could even know
yeah.
or even guess what he was feeling at the time. And I'm sure we invited him over. He tries to come over. Then we tell him, no, you can't come over. We send him back. He was probably shaking his head going, what is wrong with you people? I mean, I don't know. I just know that he was very, you know, he was getting more and more rocking faster and faster as he sat there. And I don't know. I came inside the house. I was trying to calm my friend. And I looked outside again through the window, and it was dark. The moon had gone behind the clouds. So I don't know if he was still out there or right up by the house. I don't know. We just stayed in the house from that point.
Probably a good thing.
Yeah, and you know, I haven't ever seen one since. That was in 2010. It's now 2015. This is the longest in my career of being a Bigfoot researcher that I have gone without seeing a Bigfoot.
You're in the same
and I'm
place.
Blessed, though. I've seen one 5 times. There are people out there who've never seen one. So
yeah.
I'm not complaining.
Yeah.
I'm not complaining. I'm blessed. And that last experience was icing on the cake. If nothing ever happens again, that's okay. I'm good.
Are you in the same place as you were
yes.
when you saw that?
Yes. Yes. Yes.
That's pretty interesting.
Right here. Yeah. Well, and not a lot happens here. It is really not a very active place. Rare. I've had a few events, few experiences here, a handful. My son, when he lived here, he had a handful of experiences. But it's just been really random. There's no season, rhyme, or anything. No telling when. Let me tell you what happened to me. Me and the same girl that was on the porch that we had that event, we found a very remote area to pitch tent. There was no one for miles. And she was very nervous about being there because there was no one else around, you know?
Uh-huh.
She was more worried about crazy rednecks, you know? But nothing really happened. It was, you know, the weather conditions were terrible. It was windy. We couldn't blow a fire. Our lantern, we didn't bring the right lantern. We broke it. I had packed the wrong lantern. It didn't work. So we ended up going to bed fairly early because we couldn't even have, we had no light. That morning, I wake up and she's standing by my bed. And I go, what? She's going, you know, I felt her touching my sleeping bag. She goes, somebody is peeing outside the tent. And I heard it.
Oh, wow.
And it sounded like somebody peeing from the top of a ladder onto the ground. You know, the distance of the way it was hitting the ground, it was really, really loud. It didn't sound like a person peeing. It sounded like a horse peeing.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, my God. And right about that time, it was just getting light. And I said, oh, we never heard anything leave, nothing. Well, do you have any other questions?
Yeah, actually, I have 1,000 other questions. But if you need to go, you just let me know.
Okay.
I need to go soon.
My Bluetooth is trying to die on me.
Okay. All right. Well, let me just ask you, let's do just 2 more questions, and then we'll call it
a
night.
Okay.
What do you think about infrasound?
Definitely believe in infrasound. Let me tell you why. Because we've done a lot of experiments with infrasound.
Mm-hmm.
We have one area that we go to that's down near the Neches River in the Angelina National Forest. And this area is notorious for infrasound. We would catch infrasound from both sides of the road. And so what we did was we would take a group of individuals down there, as many as 10, and we would stay. Even though the infrasound was like, it was really hard to stay there because infrasound is so invasive on the body.
Right.
Now, not everybody could feel it, but yet they had the residual effects of infrasound. So we had some people that were, it was visibly making them feel bad or they couldn't take the pressure on their chest. That's where I feel it. And they would get inside the car and it would ease up. We noticed that some of the men, particularly Bear and Kumbo, they could not feel the infrasound at all. But yet they, after we left the area, and this was an adrenaline-charged, you know, experience, they should not have been sleeping. Even though they're very experienced and everything like that, and I'm pretty sure it wasn't just same-old to them, but yet they were so sleepy they could hardly keep their eyes open. They were laying their heads up against the truck window going to sleep.
Huh.
And yet other people had, they literally got ill from it. Some just got very, almost all of us, our reactions, our reflexes slowed way down. We noticed that when we were driving out of there, we were driving really slow. And we were talking slow. And we were moving slow. Because we had been in it for over an hour. I know that it can be directional. It can be on one single person and not on anyone else. I've experienced that. I had one individual that say, man, they are on me. They're on me. And we would go over there and stand in front of them, and you could feel it. You just get blasted. Another time I tried getting behind us. He's not with us anymore. But he used to, this guy from Indiana, we called him Indy. He was a big fella, wide. He was about 4 foot wide as he was tall. And when the infrasound was hitting us, I could get behind him and his body would block it.
Huh.
So, yeah, you could duck down behind the car. And as long as you have something pretty thick between you and the direction of the infrasound, you can actually block infrasound.
That's pretty neat. That's a new one on me. That's something I will have to take note of and try to investigate further.
Yes, yes. Well, a lot of people flee. When they start feeling infrasound, they get that feeling they need to leave. Well, we would fight that feeling. And some people were uncomfortable with that. They would get in the car. But the rest of us stayed out there with it just to see what kind of effect it would have on us. And to see if they would continue to do it. And they did. They continued to blast us for over an hour until we decided we had enough. And we were catching it from both sides of the road. Like they were just sitting off in the woods on both sides of this road. And we're parked in the road and they're just blasting us.
That's really
interesting. And this is really standard procedure for them down here in East Texas. They are big on infrasound down here. That is one way we are definitely sure they're here, is we get blasted.
Gotcha. I had a different question, but I just realized there's a third recording.
Okay.
This one's called Strange Vocals, Hour 5.
What is it?
It's called Strange Vocals, Hour 5. I can play it if you want
me. Sure.
Okay, hold on. Let me play it. Short one, but I could hear it in the background. I don't know if you could, just coming off my
computer. What did it sound like?
It sounded like a monkey. It was like,
really?
It was 18 seconds long and it went.
I know what it was. We were up in southeastern Oklahoma, and we were camping in a public campground, but there wasn't very many people there. There was like one other group down the way from us, and that was it. This was recorded from across this little lake, and it came from an area where there were no people, where no camping area. It was wooded back in that way. It was just a strange sound, and it was the only thing I got the entire night. And but to me, it sounded like a Sasquatch would sound. But I don't, if it was, I don't know if it was or not. But
definitely interesting.
Yes.
It's intriguing. Like, it doesn't sound like anything I've ever heard, so I don't know.
Exactly. Well, me too, you know. So, but we were in an area I wasn't familiar with. We really had no other activity that I could speak of. So, you know, whether they're there or not, but it was in at the foothills of the Kaimichi Mountains. So Kaimichis are notorious for having legendary, very large Bigfoot. And so, you know, maybe it was. I don't know.
Definitely something worth listening to.
Yes.
All right. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me, Lori. I know it's been rough the last couple of weeks for you. You had a cold.
And I thank you for this opportunity to interview without coughing and coughing up a lung and blowing my nose and being hoarse. And I really appreciate this chance to.
Well, tell people how they can find you guys. It's on Blog Talk Radio. That'd be Night Callers.
Night Callers Bigfoot Radio. We have a radio show every Thursday night at 8:00 Central Time, 9:00 Eastern, 6:00 Pacific, and 7:00 Mountain Time. Every Thursday night is 2 hours long. We've been interviewing Bigfoot researchers every week. Great stuff. We've been getting some really good guests.
It's my favorite show at this point right now.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. We really enjoy doing it. It is a passion of ours. We were on the air for 3 years, and then we took a three-year break. No, we were on the air for 2 years. We took a three-year break, and then we came back. And so we're just letting everyone know we're back, and we're doing shows again. And for y'all to come and listen, and I think you'll really enjoy it. So it's every Thursday night at 8 on Blog Talk Radio. Also, we have a Facebook page. You look up Night Callers Bigfoot Radio, you'll find our Facebook page. You can like us, share us, and see what shows are coming up.
Excellent. That's perfect.
Okay. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for just taking the time to talk to me. I love these interviews. Like, it's my favorite thing to do is just talk to other people about this stuff.
I do too. I absolutely do. It's very exciting, especially when we get the younger researchers on, the new ones. You can just pick up on that excitement.
Yeah.
You know, after you've been doing it a while, you kind of lose that excitement because it's, you know, you just become accustomed to things. So when you hear that excitement in their voices, it's almost like going back and reliving it. So it's really nice. But,
very cool.
Thank you.
Let's not make
thank
this the last know. Time we talk. Let's do this again
absolutely
soon.
Not. I would absolutely do that. Just call me and let you know when you want to do it.
Excellent. All right.
Okay.
I will talk to you later. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Good night.
Bye.
They say he's a legend or the missing link, folklore or myth. Tell me what you think when you're in. Senses come alive. You can smell his presence in the blink of an eye. Bigfoot, Sasquatch back in the woods. Bigfoot, Yeti in your neighborhood. Bigfoot, skunk ape, busy beast or man. Bigfoot, Wendigo living off the land. Out in the mountains where the wild only walk, you can find a footprint that won't fit a sock. Crying in the night. A full moon is all you see. You might hear a grunt, some knocking on some trees. Bigfoot Sasquatch back in the woods. Bigfoot Yeti in your neighborhood. Bigfoot Skunk Ape, is he Beaster Man? Bigfoot Wendigo living off the land. Some people have spotted him every now and then. You never know if he's lurking just around the bend. He stands about 8 foot tall with big red eyes. Is he an animal or just a guy in a very scary, hairy disguise? Bigfoot Sasquatch back in the woods. Bigfoot Yeti in your neighborhood. Bigfoot Skunk Ape, is he Beast or Man? Wendigo living off the land, searching for Bigfoot, searching for Bigfoot, searching for Bigfoot, searching for Bigfoot Sasquatch back in the woods. Bigfoot Yeti in your neighborhood. Bigfoot Skunk Ape, is he Beast or Man? Big.